Okay, well, welcome everyone. This is Dr. Hedberg, and welcome to the Dr. Hedberg Show. Today we have exciting guests, Michael Dietrich Chastain. Michael is the founder of a local business called Path to Synergy, where he provides organizational consulting, coaching, and counseling services. As an executive or leadership coach, Michael has helped organizational leaders and teams become more effective in recognizing how to inspire, engage, resolve conflict, and communicate with others. Through coaching, Michael also helps individuals recognize and develop strengths in order to become more effective in their careers and personal lives. Michael is also a licensed professional counselor who's passionate about helping individuals resolve anxiety, stress, conflict, burnout, and work-life balance. Through much of his work, Michael sees the value in empowering clients to re-engage with their sense of purpose. In addition to his background in mental health and coaching, Michael has facilitated trainings on leadership, team building, communication, emotional intelligence, employee engagement, self-care, and other topics. All right, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, sir. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
So we're going to be talking today about anxiety. And so why don't we start with you just telling us a little bit about your definition of anxiety and what it means to you.
Sure, absolutely. One of the things that I like to highlight is this idea of having anxiety as in anxiety symptoms versus having a disorder like generalized anxiety disorder. And so the reason I say that is because, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, the general public confuses having regular anxiety symptoms, which we all have, versus having, you know, having anxiety disorder. So people often say I have anxiety like it's this this real challenging dysfunction, so to speak, when in reality, I think we all have levels of anxiety, you know, more or less throughout our days or weeks or months. And so to explain that a little bit further, if you think about anxiety, just in generally speaking, it might be, you know, the nervousness that you get before a social engagement, or, you know, the sweaty palms you might get before a public speaking, or, you know, nervousness about a first date, or, you know, a job promotion or an evaluation. So, or a wide variety of other things, you know. And so this kind of anxiety can show up in, you know, it can show up in sweaty palms, or, you know, a lot of heat in the body, or it can show up in, you know, nausea or headaches, or, you know, a variety of other symptoms. And then generalized anxiety disorder, or a disorder that is related to anxiety, like panic, for instance, is much more debilitating. And so, you know, the symptoms there, you're looking at, you know, things like, you know, anxiety levels to the point where you can't get into public situations, or anxiety levels that yield a sense of panic to where you need to escape something, or, you know, sometimes even to the point where, you know, you get into agoraphobia, which is where people don't want to leave a particular environment, like their home, for instance. Mm-hmm. And so that level of anxiety is kind of another thing to look at. And so, you know, I say those two different definitions only to kind of normalize it a little bit, in the sense that we all experience anxiety in varying levels. And the good news is that there's ways to manage it. So.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So now that we've kind of defined it, why don't we go ahead and jump in? You wanted to discuss three, you know, big things, helpful things that people can do if they start to experience anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. So to give you an example, I was just at a training recently, and we were talking about this idea of, you know, kind of behavior change. It's related to anxiety, but really you could look at, you know, any kind of behavior that you're wanting to shift. And in this story I'm about to tell, there's a gentleman standing up and asking, well, if I'm going to change this behavior at work, you know, what's the practice, what's the silver bullet, so to speak, that I can do, you know, to immediately change that? And I imagine that might be the question for folks that are troubled with anxiety as well. You know, what's the silver bullet? And, you know, the unfortunate answer to that is, in my work, I don't see there being, you know, one particular kind of practice that will eliminate it. But I do see things, that interventions that you can do that will, you know, drastically impact your level of anxiety and ability to manage it. And that's what I'll share today. And so I say that, you know, prefacing generalization piece only to say that, you know, interventions and strategies work, but they need to be practiced over time in order to have them be effective. And so the first one I would say is, you know, having some kind of daily practice is really important. And, you know, what I mean by that is that it's a lot easier to manage a symptom like, you know, symptoms that come up around anxiety or anger or, you know, frustration or rage even, if you have a practice that goes on prior to being triggered. And so a daily practice could look like a number of things. It could look like, you know, a journaling practice. It could look like a fitness routine. It could look like, you know, meditation or mindfulness, and we'll get into that in a little while. But having some kind of regular practice that de-stresses you every day, even when you feel like you don't need it, is going to build your capacity to be able to utilize that practice or that level of de-stressing when you need it. So when you start to feel that anxiety. So that's number one, is a daily practice of some kind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, number two, and this is, and I'd be curious to hear your feedback on this as well. You know, one of the things that I always talk to folks about, and I'm not a doctor, so I've, you know, limited amount of input, but what I see is so important is this idea of just kind of the foundations of health, you know, regular sleep that is sufficient, which I think we often, you know, have false understanding of how much sleep we need, but regular movement in the form of some kind of regular exercise, and then healthy eating. And so, you know, those three cornerstones are so important to manage, you know, anything, whether it's an anxiety symptom or any other, you know, emotional or mental challenge that we have. And so I imagine that comes up a lot in your work as well. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Regular movement, nutrition, things like that, extremely important for reducing anxiety. You know, just with the regular movement, you know, people, unfortunately, in our day, this day and age, they tend to be more, you know, sympathetic, dominant, fight or flight. There's a lot of adrenaline, you know, floating around in the body when people are at rest at their desk and things like that. And just getting out and moving is really going to help to burn up that adrenaline and really help to calm them down. And then, of course, food, you know, that's a major, major factor. But I think the main thing with that is going to be the microbiome in the gut. We're just learning more and more about the connections with the gut bacteria and mood disorders. Many, many studies now on certain types of bacteria, bacterial overgrowth, and then, you know, what we call dysbiosis, which is mainly dysbiosis just means that the bacteria in the gut are out of balance, and clear connections there with anxiety. So yeah, mm-hmm. those are definitely important.
Yeah, I love that. I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's really in a very exciting time. You know, I've read a little bit of that research as well. And yeah, it's fascinating to see the relationship between, you know, how we treat our body and what we feed it, and how that has consequences for our, you know, our psychology, which is a really fascinating translation to make. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, it'll be exciting to see what they discover, you know, in the next 5-10 years. And so, mm-hmm. yeah. And then the third tip is, again, something that I see very evident in my work over the last, you know, 10 years or so, is this, you know, regular meditation or mindfulness practice. And so if you think about, this is a very simple way to think about anxiety, but if you think about anxiety as very future focused and, you know, kind of depression as a past focused element, mm-hmm. The idea there then being, you know, how do we remain in the present, so we're not, you know, consistently thinking about the what ifs, you know, how things might occur, you know, how things might, you know, unfold, and remain, you know, existing in our current moment. This can be a resolution for both anxiety and depression. So regular meditation and mindfulness practices could look like a number of things. You know, there's seated meditation, there is, you know, there's yoga meditation, there's, you know, things like qigong, where there are, and there's just general mindfulness meditation practices as well. If you look up Jon Kabat-Zinn, he has some teachings on practicing meditation and how that can reduce stress and certainly have implications on anxiety. But you know, one of the things that I find is that, you know, if you talk about mindfulness or meditation with folks that don't have any experience with it, you might get some hesitancy or some pushback. And so one of the devices that I think is a popular one and a good translation for folks that need an introduction to meditation is called the Muse, M-U-S-E. And that's a tool that I'll use with some of my clients if they have interest. But you can find more information about that at choosemuse.com. That's their website. And then I also wrote an article about this not too long ago, which maybe we can link to that in the show notes. But basically what it is, it's a biofeedback machine. So it's a headband that you wear that gives you regular feedback in the form of sound. And it's based on how relaxed or active your brain is. And so what it does is you'll have a scene that would be like a beach scene, for instance. And, you know, the more active you are in your thinking, the more loud and crashing the waves are. And then the more calm your thinking is, the more soft and soothing the waves are. So it's helpful in the sense that it gives you that immediate feedback so that you can understand that your state of mind or your state of activity, you know, can have an impact on, you know, something like the sound. And so it helps people to have just an experience that shows them there's a relationship between, you know, their ability to relax and, you know, their physical state, mental state. So, so that would be number three. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the first one, daily practice, that's really good advice. A lot of these things you talked about can be formulated into that daily practice. You know, meditation doesn't really matter what time you do it. At least that's what I tell patients, just whatever works for them, whether it's first thing in the morning, during their lunch break, you know, at night. And another one that I've been recommending a lot lately is journaling. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything that you wanted to say about journaling, or do you recommend that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can actually give a resource for that too. I definitely recommend journaling. And, you know, I work with a wide variety of clients, you know, everything from, you know, anxiety to workplace stress, to leadership, to motivation, discipline, and, you know, other challenges as well. And journaling always seems to come up. And so I think part of that is just, you know, this ability to kind of unload whatever it is that is, you know, occupying our headspace is really helpful regardless of what the challenge is. And so, you know, getting just a standard journal and writing in it regularly, like you said, I totally agree, regardless of the time of day and whatever works for you, but having it into a regular consistent practice. So even if you can only carve out, you know, 10 minutes a day, you know, that's that consistency that's going to improve, you know, improve the practice and then eventually, you know, improve the symptoms that you're having. And so the consistency is where it's at. But if someone is looking for a more specific guided tool, there's a resource that I'll often point clients to called the 5-Minute Journal. And the reason, you know, it's valuable for a couple of reasons, but I think, you know, one is that it gives you cues to tie into. So it'll ask you questions about, you know, things to write about. And so it might be, you know, be gratitudes, or it might be, you know, successes or challenges. And so it's helpful to kind of have that cue, but it's also really fast. And so, you know, five minute journal, meaning, you know, just 5 minutes a day. And so for folks that are, you know, very occupied and, you know, busy with work and, you know, life commitments, that can be helpful too. Small commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The 5-Minute Journal, I am familiar with that. I've used it a little bit myself, and it's very beneficial, especially, you know, just the part of being grateful is a big thing, because a lot of times we get caught up in what we don't have and we don't think about all the things that we do have. So that can really help to calm things down as well.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But my big three at this point, as far as what I've been telling patients, is the meditation, the journaling, and then nature walks. So that kind of goes along with what you were saying with the daily movement. And because you can do the daily movement, but if you actually get out in nature, So I always ask everyone, you know, do you have a park that you can go to or trails or things like that? And that's actually been shown to really enhance creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people's creativity these days is just really stifled for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So now one other thing I wanted to ask you about is the effect of social media. I recently wrote an article about the effects of social media on the brain and the mood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my research was not all that. Some of it was surprising. Some of it wasn't. Like the effects are somewhat similar to cocaine
mm-hmm.
on the brain, you know, checking texts, emails, the Facebook likes, you know, people will post things on Facebook and all those likes that they get are like little hits.
Mm-hmm.
So could you talk a little bit about the effects of social media and possibly its connection with anxiety and other mood disorders?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I appreciate that question. And I would be curious to hear your comments on the biology of that too. That's fascinating. But what I can say from, you know, what I see, particularly in younger population, you know, the younger generations have come up in this this world of social media, whereas, you know, the generation before them, you know, that's something that's kind of been put in place, and so I think there's less intensity around it. But, you know, what comes to mind for me when you look at that is this idea of internal versus external validation. And so the meaning behind that being that, you know, if we seek to get our self-esteem and our worth and our value from input and feedback externally, like a great example is social media, or, you know, the opinions of others, or, you know, how well we did on something, or, you know, all of these external inputs, then that can often result in things like anxiety or depression or, you know, anger and fear and a lot of other things. And so building the capacity for, you know, in our own internal validation, meaning that we get the source for our esteem from ourselves and our own experiences rather than the feedback or input from others, it's huge. And, you know, of course, that something like that characteristically is, I think, partially developed, you know, when we're children, you know, based on our environments and our parenting and all that. But certainly something that we can build the capacity for. And again, I think the question becomes, well, how do you build that capacity for internal validation versus external? And it comes back to these practices, just like you're saying, you know, the journaling, the moving away from the electronic feedback and getting out into nature, you know, the daily practice of, you know, mindfulness. And so the ways to really check in with, you know, who we are and what's our experience outside of the context of the feedback that we get is a way to build that capacity for internal validation. And so yeah, that would be my feedback as far as the social media is concerned.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And so we've talked a little bit about, you know, the movement and the nutrition and some of these other things. This is more a question of advice, but have you ever encountered, you know, anyone that you've worked with who, you know, you recommend meditation and they say something like, well, I don't believe in that, or I don't need to do meditation, I pray.
Mm-hmm.
What is your usual response to that?
It's an interesting question. I would say a couple things. If, you know, if the question was, you know, I don't need meditation, and that was an intervention we were talking about. It's, you know, I oftentimes will just kind of roll with what the client is both willing to do and has interest in. And so my question would be, okay, if meditation is going to be it, what is the thing that it's going to be? Because, you know, obviously the practice that you've engaged in thus far aren't working to manage whatever the concern is. So, you know, if it's not going to be, you know, the suggested practice, what will it be? Because certainly there, you know, there might be an alternative for someone. Maybe their practice is, you know, riding a bicycle, for instance, long distance or something, just as an example. So certainly there could be an alternative, but my challenge would be, you know, are they willing to engage in something? Otherwise, they might not. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there, right? And and the second piece about the the prayer. I think that I'm certainly willing to work with that and have, and I've certainly seen that to be beneficial in people's life. That regular practice of intentional quiet focused time. I've seen that to be beneficial in reducing anger, reducing anxiety, reducing challenges with mood, and so. Whether they call it, prayer or mindfulness or meditation, sometimes I think that doesn't necessarily matter. In my work, I see the power being in the consistency of the practice. And so I think that's often where the success comes in.
Right, right. Okay. So those are some really good tips for the listeners. Anything else you can think of that you wanted to add?
Well, I would say, one of the challenges, just as an aside, with any of these things is being able to, hold yourself accountable. And so, whether that means setting up positive negative consequences for, yourself if, you don't reach the goal that you have. Sometimes that works really well for people. And then if not, that's where the value of seeking, a coach or a therapist comes in, is being able to have an accountability partner and to be able to talk to, someone about, you have the goal of a regular practice and you're only able to meet it part of the time. And so what do you do about, gaining the completion of that goal? And so that would be my other tip, would be to either set up, personal accountability on your own, or, seek a resource like a therapist or a coach to have that accountability conversation.
Right. Right. One other question that has come up, just thinking through this, what have you seen on social isolation as a contributing factor to anxiety? We just see a lot of that these days. A lot of single people, living alone, they don't really get out much. And we're starting to see, a lot of the negative effects on the brain and the mood. Do you have anything to add to that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, we are absolutely communal creatures. And so, I think there's a lot of evidence to show that, there's certainly varying, personalities and introverted versus extroverted, style. And so it might be that, you tend to gravitate towards, wanting more individualized time, but the caveat being that, we can't have an extreme of, like you said, isolation. I think what happens when we disconnect is, our ability to go out in public, to engage socially, to, interact, that's where the potential for anxiety goes way up, because if it becomes so unfamiliar and becomes, it almost creates a sense of fear around it, then the likelihood to either develop anxiety symptoms or for them to, to increase is certainly, you're at higher risk. And I have definitely seen that in my work, in both directions, in the sense of, the more isolated someone becomes, the higher their symptoms go up, and the opposite as well. If someone comes in and they're working on becoming more social, and then over time they've been able to create practices where they are getting out and making, making more community connections, building deeper friendships, building other kinds of relationships, that those symptom levels go down. And so, yeah, I definitely see that relationship regularly in my work.
Yeah, me as well. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and post all the things that we talked about today on the website, drhedberg.com, in the show notes, so we can give them those resources like the 5-minute journal and things like that.
Great.
So where can people find you? Where would you like people to look you up online?
Yeah, thank you. If they want to read more about the services that my business has, organizational consulting and counseling as well as coaching, they can find that at pathtosynergy.com. And there's contact information there as well. And I do a lot of posting around personal development on social media. And so I'll blog and do video blogs as well. And I'm on most social media channels, but it's the same name, Path to Synergy. And so whether it's Facebook or Twitter or YouTube, for instance, they can search Path to Synergy and find me there as well.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
All right, Michael. Well, it was a pleasure. Thanks for coming on the show. Maybe we'll do it again sometime and cover a different topic.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Dr. Hedberger. It was really nice chatting with you today.
All right. Thanks again. Take care, everyone. Again, just go to the website, drhedberg.com, to get all the links and information that we talked about today. And thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Take care.